Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, April 21st, 2015. Good day, Al.
Oh, Melody.
Well, we have gold and silver today. They're moving up a little bit, 1202.70 for gold, 590 to the upside, 1608 for silver, up 4 cents. Platinum is up $2 at 1153, along with palladium down two at 774. USDX today is trading stronger, 0.06, 97.97. Crude oil is down $1.12 at 55.58. Paper markets today, down 84, 17,950. The NASDAQ was up 20 at 5,014. Excuse me. S&P down 3 at 2,097. 10-year yield 1.92%. The euro is trading at 107. Asian markets were strong overnight, probably following the news of China with their interest rate drop, and kind of a unusual day. I think all eyes are back on Greece, and certainly it was pretty much of a quiet day out there today, Al.
Yeah, I know. Well, they're just resting up. It's like the old definition of peace. That's the time when everybody stops to reload. You know, this is like a slow news day. Okay, but wait till tomorrow. Thursday at the latest, there'll be new events. It's just inevitable. We have a few slow days from time to time. You mentioned Greece. Here's a situation with, here's an article from the Associated Press that deals with Greece. And it says Greek anger over state cash grab from hospitals, schools. Greek local authorities are on the brink of revolt Tuesday against the central government's move to use cash reserves from state agencies, including hospitals and kindergartens, to help the country make ends meet. In other words, the national government of Greece wants to grab money from the lower governmental entities. If they got any spare cash, government wants it. They don't want to give it up. At an emergency meeting in Athens, angry mayors called for blank refusal to comply, staging protests or taking the radical left-led government to court over its order to have spare reserves, cash reserves, put in a central bank account. Not a single municipality should deposit even 1 euro at the Bank of Greece, said the Ioannis Lotis, mayor of a northwestern town in Greece, citing, and this is where it gets kind of fun. It says, citing an extremely urgent and unforeseen, unquote, need for cash. An emergency government decree Monday rendered funds from state entities such as National Opera, the National Art Gallery, and even hospitals and kindergartens available for short-term loans to the national government. That is expected to raise, these loans are expected to raise about $2.7 billion. Okay? First, they are citing an extremely urgent and unforeseen need for cash. Unforeseen, they've been at this. This has been going on since 2009. We have been dealing with the perils of Greece. And there's, oh my gosh, I had no idea that we're going to run out of cash. Are you crazy? I mean, you know, how could anyone be so stupid that they couldn't understand that Greece was about to run out of cash? Unforeseen, my buns, all right? They knew this was coming. It was inevitable. We know it's coming. Everybody knows it's coming. And like we said yesterday, why don't they just do it and get it over with? Default on the debt and move on. You know, let's do that. And they want this money made available the national government wants the money from lower government entities. They want it made available for short-term loans to the state. Say, you take your extra money that you have at the state, municipal level, local level, school districts, whatever. And if you got an extra cash, you're going to lend it to the Greek national government. And, of course, they'll pay you back. They want to borrow basically another $3 billion from lower governmental entities. And they can't pay the existing $300 billion in debt. What makes anyone think they're going to pay another $3 billion in debt? Just as, you know, and so, of course, the local governments are rioting. So what this means is the national government is in debt for over $300 billion, which they can't possibly pay, and they want to borrow another $3 billion, less than 1% of their current debt, from other Greek governmental entities. The Greek governmental entities are predictably furious about the proposed loans because they have to know that if the Greek national government can't repay the $300 billion it already owes, it's not likely to repay another $300 billion borrowed from government and agencies and municipalities. Now, but the most important point here is that the Greek national government must have been able to foresee that the lower Greek governmental entities, agencies, municipalities, school districts, whatever, would be infuriated by plans to confiscate their spare reserves. Nevertheless, the Greek national government, at a time when maintaining national unity against foreign creditors would seem crucial, has chosen to cause huge political divisions between itself and the lower Greek governmental agencies and entities and so on. This choice of that causes political division, it makes no sense unless the Greek national government is extraordinarily dumb or extraordinarily desperate. And I'm betting on desperate. They are just at the end. They are at the end of the tether, and that's the implication here. The article continues, another paragraph. What have I got left? One more sentence out of the article. The move, unprecedented in recent Greek history, is the latest sign that the country is running perilously short of cash amid an impasse in bailout talks with its international creditors. That's true. The national Greek government must be just about penniless if it's reduced to trying to steal less than 1% of what it currently owes to foreign creditors from local Greek governmental entities. Greece is grasping at straws. It is a drowning man. It looks to me as if Greece will either, one, bend to the will of its creditors and agree to subject the Greek people to austerity and try to pay off the $300 billion it owes. They'll either bend to the will of their creditors or refuse, and they can't pay the debt. They've admitted they can't pay it. And the alternative is you bend to the will of the creditors or to flat out break, just snap like a dry twig, perhaps even before the end of this month. The Greek national government is robbing its own governmental entities to try to avoid the inevitable bankruptcy for another few weeks or months. But we can expect that when it's the U.S. government's turn to admit it's bankrupt, it will also try to rob even this lower state and the local governments to make ends meet to survive for a few more months. So there's a lesson here in Greece. It's a tragedy for Greece. I assume that's what it is. It's being portrayed that way, and it'll probably work out that way. But it's going to be a tragedy. We can sit back and say, oh, poor Greece. Hey, ask not for whom the bell tolls. The bell tolls for thee. The problems we're seeing in Greece right now, and we can cluck and say, oh, how could they be so stupid? The problems we have in this country are bigger proportionally than what they have in Greece. Greece is in debt. The Greece national government's in debt for $300 billion. Our government is debt, or they admit to being in debt for $18 trillion. And the real national debt is probably somewhere between $100 and $200 trillion, which is not officially admitted except by the Congressional Budget Office. They've admitted that, but the executive branch otherwise has not. Right? We're in a worse predicament than Greece, although we are not, you know, that predicament is not facing us as immediately as the one that's facing Greece. We're not that far behind. You know, we might be able to string it together for a couple, hold it together for a couple more years, but, and maybe not. Maybe we can only hold it together until next fall. Or who knows, maybe we can hold it for 3-4 years. I don't know. Nobody knows. But we are closer and closer and closer to the moment when, like Greece, we're going to have to admit we can't pay the bills. And when that moment arrives, that's when the trouble really begins. What else, Melody?
Well, they did have their rates increased yesterday, so their costs just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Yep. You know, and their rates. But, you know, as we had talked before, who's going to take that bet?
Yeah, I know. And on the bonds.
On the bonds, on their bonds, yeah.
And yeah, their bonds are paying like 27% or something like that.
So the banking sector in Athens, they're on the verge of a collapse. So.
Yeah, I know.
So.
The whole thing is just, and we're in this again. I'm going to, you know, we standard conclusion from me at least. Is that some or all of this problem in Greece can be traced to the use of fiat currency.
Fiat currency.
Yeah. You know, the government likes fiat currency because they can spin it out of thin air. And they can, if they need to increase the money supply, they can do that by just fire up the printing presses and print off a few trillion more paper dollars. And in theory, that's enough to stimulate the economy. And it must have been... And for much of, I don't know, for a couple hundred years, that was probably a great objective, an almost unimaginable goal for economists and government and people in government who wanted to control the economy and nation and so on. If we could just get away from this gold and silver and get a fiat currency, then we can spend as much as we want whenever we need it. The problem with gold and silver is that you can't just spin it out of thin air. If we get into an economic circumstance that's tough and somebody says, holy cow, we're going into a recession or a depression, we need to spend some money, add money to the money supply in order to stimulate the economy. Well, if you have a monetary system that's based on gold and silver, you can't just pull that money out of thin air. If you need more gold or silver, somebody's got to go dig a hole in the ground, drive a tunnel, and start hauling the gold out of the bowels of the earth. It requires work and effort and sacrifice, and people can even die. With fiat currency, all you got to do is sign your name to a piece of paper, authorize knock down a few hundred thousand more trees, get some ink, dress it up, send it out, let the yokels think they have money. They'll go out and spend it. Government wanted that fiat currency because it would give them an ability to control the economy that was not available with gold and silver coin. With gold and silver, you couldn't control. You had to be responsible. But with fiat, paper, digital, currencies, government can disperse that wherever it wants. It can give it to half a dozen banks on Wall Street if that's what it wants to do. Or it can subsidize particular industries or corporations or political movements. It gives government enormous control, enormous power to be able to use a fiat currency rather than gold and silver, and that's why they want it. But now we are reaching a point where this is apparently blowing up in their faces. Government is no longer able to manipulate the economy to the same extent it has in the past. They raise or lower interest rates, excuse me, and that should stimulate the economy, but it does not. Now what? They've increased the money supply by giving $3 trillion to half a dozen, five or six Wall Street banks. And what positive effect has it had on the economy? And the answer is not a whole lot. There may be some positive effect, but it's not a whole lot. All right? And the implication is governments, they are running out of control mechanisms. They only have two devices to control the economy at the Federal Reserve, and one is interest rates and the other one's money supply, and neither one of them is being used in a way that can stimulate the economy right now. We I don't remember if we talked about this already in the first segment of the program or we talked about it in the earlier program. I know we did in the earlier program. I don't think we've talked about this just yet. But if we have, just stop me and I'll move on to something else. But the problem the government has, why is it that Janet Yellen and the almighty Federal Reserve can't re-stimulate the economy? Why isn't the fiat currency working? Why aren't the zero interest rates or near zero interest rates working to stimulate the economy? And I think the reason is because the government is lying. The government comes out and tells us we have 5-point-something% unemployment in this country. But John Williams says, no, it's actually about 23%. And again, if Williams is right, and I'm inclined to believe him, if Williams is right, we have unemployment rates that suggest we are already in a Great Depression. All right? This is maybe the reason why the Fed's interest rate jockeying doesn't work and their money supply jockeying doesn't work. If a quarter of the people don't have jobs, how are you? What difference does it make if you throw an extra $3 trillion into the banks or reduce interest rates to near zero? It's not enough to overcome a fundamental hallmark of depression, and that is we're already so deeply unemployed that we're not going to get out of this thing until something extraordinary takes place. You're not going to get your way out of it. They're not going to escape this problem by fine-tuning the interest rate, and maybe we'll raise it in June or maybe September. The problem is too big to be resolved by the usual mechanisms available to the Federal Reserve. That's a possible explanation. I won't tell you that's God's truth, but that's what it appears to be. And there's a high probability. What's the problem? The government won't admit the real unemployment rate. You know, a lot of our problems here make perfect sense once you start to consider the unemployment rate might be over 20%. Then all of a sudden, no, it's not a mystery. There's no confusion here. Huh? But as long as we say, oh, our unemployment rate is only 5%, things are fine. Well, if that's not true, if that's a lie, but we operate and try to tune the economy based on the presumption that it's true, you know, it's just not going to work. We're going to have problems that we will not be able to resolve until somebody faces the truth. And when is that likely to happen with this government? I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We will be back in a couple of minutes. Please stay tuned.
Women get older, they are subject to hormone imbalance. And when this happens, men can experience osteoporosis, memory loss, irritability, blood sugar imbalance, weight gain, enlarged prostate, erectile dysfunction, and risk of stroke. The human endocrine system manufactures hormones. Why not feed your system plant nutrition to make the hormones that are right for you? For centuries, these herbs have been used to balance the male hormone system. Men, you've waited long enough for the male hormone formula. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free 866-229-3663 for the male hormone formula. 866-229-3663 or online at thepowerherbs.com. 866-229-3663, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Does the cost and risk of conventional healthcare concern you? Wouldn't you prefer inexpensive solutions to health problems rather than disease management? If so, tune into Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, we have a caller. We have Jim in West Virginia.
Jim?
Oh, I just thought you said it was a slow news day, so I thought I'd liven things up a little bit.
Hey, Jim, before
yeah.
you go on, could you please
Say
call
again?
Me? Could you please call me after the program?
Yes, ma'am.
All righty. Thank you.
Okay,
yes,
so what's that for him?
I'm having a hard time hearing you guys.
Well, I'm not having trouble hearing you. I don't know what I can tell you.
Well, my own voice, my ear is blowing my brains out, but I can't barely hear you. The overall standard of living is a function of the efficiency of an economy. You poking holes in the ground with a stick to plant seeds, not so efficient. Using tillers and such as that, much more efficient. Tractors, much more efficient. What can I say? Businesses have done everything they could to increase their efficiency. And there's so many advantages. Now, I pretty much had to have a mobile phone, oh, this is way back in the 80s, doing instrumentation work. Had to have communication. My first one cost $3,500, had a 7-foot antenna. Now they dang near giveaway cell phones, and the coverage is great. I'm interested in communication. It used to be that two-way radio systems, only a few businesses had those. But all I'm saying is that there are so many things which we have advantages of in this country. We have good roads. We have a communication system and the Internet, making it efficient. So businesses have taken care of just about everything they can take care of to increase their efficiency. Now, the monetary policy, y'all talk about that all the time. So let's just say that the audience surely knows about it unless they're a first-time listener. But the only thing we need to do to stimulate this economy is to take the brakes off We put the pedal to the floor with everything, with technology, with availability of credit, quantitative easing, all kinds of stimulus, all kinds of stuff. But the only thing we have to do is take the brakes off. Insofar as businesses' rules and regulations, okay, whenever you increase business rules, regulation, or taxation, all you do is you decrease the availability of goods, increase the price of goods. You increase depressed wages with business taxes. You also increase unemployment, and you drive businesses out of business or out of taxing jurisdiction. Does that sound like a blueprint of what's happened to America? You're dang right it is. Because they have sat there and bled businesses to death. Now, here's the interesting part. If you have, let's say you have a plant in a small town, $10 million of sales every year. And let's say the people who own the plant, whether it's a stock or individuals or corporation, whatever. Let's say they make $1 million. If the tax man cometh and takes that million, destroyed 9 times that in revenue. So tax takes from businesses have a multiplier effect.
Yep.
And the blankety-blanks who put all this into place know this.
Mm-hmm.
What they're doing is just putting more and more and more of a load on the engine driving the truck. More and more load on the truck. And isn't producing goods or services that people want to buy. Now, there is a solution for this. It's going to take a lot of political will. But we saw it with the Bureau of Land Management about a year or so ago. You have to get the government intervention out. Now, anytime you mess with, there are four basic cornerstones of an economy. Mining, agriculture, manufacturing, and trade. Anytime you impede any of those, you're going to decrease the quality of life. So they have done every little trick they can think of. Independent businessmen and corporations, everybody else has done everything they knew how to make things run more efficiently. The only thing now is take the brakes off now. County by county, this can start happening. But business, in order to survive, that means your job, everybody's job, is going to have to be set free of the artificial burdens which have been placed on it by our government. All these taxes, rules, regulations, etc., it's EPA, OSHA, MSHA, Department of Agriculture, I could go on and on, DEA, all of these have impeded manufacturing or mining or agriculture or trade. And like, for instance, there's a fellow I knew who had a music store many years ago, 70s. He said, we can't trade even. If you have a $100 guitar and bring it in here and want a $100 guitar, he says, I can't trade even. I got overhead and I got taxes. So every bit of our economy has been throttled. Now, you'll hear government say, oh, we have an economic development plan. Oh, yes. That's economic development for the government, not businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So the simple truth of the matter is that the biggest expense of doing business in America is not so much the wages as it is the taxation. Now, you can chisel this one in stone. It's an economic law which has never been broken. All taxes accumulate in the price of the final product.
Yep.
If you buy a General Motors car, you're buying the advertising for that car. You're buying the dealer space for that car. You're buying the taxes, employers and employees, Social Security on every employee. It had anything to do with getting that car to you. When you get an American-made car, about a third of its car, two-thirds of it is stuff. You're buying two-thirds of its taxes. You got to think about this. That means the taxes, every time you spend a dollar, two-thirds of it roughly goes for taxes. That means everything costs about 3 times the real cost of production of the goods or services. That means a taxation on all levels. You know, your tax freedom day, April, bull, that just feds. Tie in all the others, yeah, it's more like two-thirds of the way through the year. We're talking
just
August.
Just in time for Christmas shopping.
Exactly. So the bottom line is very simple. That means a taxation. Cost more than food, clothing, shelters, utilities, insurance, education, even entertainment. Now that is what has dragged America down, and the only way we'll ever get this economy going down is if we take all those brakes off. We take all those little strings holding businesses down.
But here's now, the problem with this. Let me read something to you. They've got an article from Japan Times, and the headline is "Robots Leave Chinese Factory Workers Behind." And what they what they're talking about is China's having some problems, and it goes on and says, according to the International Federation of Robotics, China bought approximately 56,000 of the 227,000 industrial robots purchased worldwide in 2014, a 54% increase since 2013. Now, here is what's dangerous. So they go on, they have a subsidy program from the Guangdong province, where they intend to subsidize the purchase of robots, according to this article, at nearly 2,000. We're not talking about a handful. We're talking about 2,000 of the provinces, and thus the world's largest manufacturers. They expect to have 80% of its factories automated by 2020. Now, here is the extraordinary implication. Well, businesses are becoming more efficient. I get that. All right? And if we take the brakes off, fine, that's a good idea. But what are we going to do about the people who ultimately don't have jobs because they've been replaced by robots? Because there's a lot of people that aren't capable of being rocket scientists and doctors. The only thing they're able to do is a kind of physical labor. And if they can't, if they are replaced by robots, how are we going to feed them? How are they going to feed themselves? What's going to happen? And the great implication: China bought approximately 56,000, about 25% of the 227,000 industrial robots purchased worldwide in 2014. That means robots are cheaper than Chinese labor. And if robots are cheaper than Chinese labor, I guarantee they're cheaper than American labor. So while we're taking all the brakes off and the rest of this sort of thing, how are we going to divide, you know, the profits, whatever? What are we going to do about the 30? You know, right now there's, John Williams says the unemployment rate's maybe 20-30% right now. If we keep bringing robots into this country, and I'm not against them, I'm not against them per se, but I'm still saying, look, we're not going to see the unemployment rate drop back down anytime soon as long as robots continually take jobs, not just in this country, but around the world.
Let me give you some historical perspective on this. Okay, automation has always put people out of work. Example, coal mining. Used to shoot from the face. A fellow would sit there and take a piece of steel, a chisel-like thing, a star drill, and hammer a hole in the coal. Mm-hmm. You put charges into that, and then they light the fuse and run like you know what. Okay, when that was replaced by continuous miners, that put a lot of workers out of business. They had to find something else to do. And when it came to longwall mining, all of a sudden that was much more efficient, put more people out of work. This is a resource allocation issue. When people can
Here's my point. But still, I get that it's a resource allocation. And normal, you squeeze the balloon at one end, it bulges someplace else. But we have a people in this country who don't have sufficient education or intelligence to do anything but something like manual labor. And those robots are going to take those manual labor jobs. And those people, what are we going to do with them? Where are we going to reallocate these people?
I got another one for you for historical perspective. Okay, what if people cost less to employ because of the whole overall taxation issue? That would put a lot of robotics out of business. I spent most of my adult life working on electronics, industrial instrumentation, sensory control, and all kinds of different outfits in four states. And that included work AI software and robotics, automation. You name it, I did it. If it was weird, I worked on it. Now, here's the point. Every time they put somebody else out of work, that opened up a job someplace else. Now, insofar as education, that is not necessarily the answer, and I'll tell you why. If you have, okay, a sweeping state decision wiped out my ability to get liability insurance to run my business, even if I left the state, as long as I owned real estate in the state, I couldn't get liability insurance to operate my business. That was in 2002. I lived off my savings for 11 years. Because if you have the right combination of education, which I got, and age, you're either overqualified or over the hill. I could not find a job. In the, I mean, I even applied for minimum wage jobs. So education is not the issue. If you had a degree in nuclear physics, you would not find a job in West Virginia. There aren't any nuclear plants here or any nuclear activity that I know of. So education is part of it, but the main thing is free up the economy. So all a fella has to do to fire up a business is get whatever he needs for the business and go with it, which is pretty much what it was when I got into business. Only thing I had to do was have a state business license. Whoop-de-doo. But now it is insane. You have all these things that destroy efficiency and destroy the labor market. You have people put in prison over marijuana, and that wipes them out, puts them into the prison population. So the problem is we have too much government interference at all levels in every area of business activity. As I said, the four cornerstones, agriculture, mining, manufacturing, and the trade. And that's the only way we're going to get out of this. And it will happen, and I'm going to tell you why. Because as the Federal Reserve note goes to pieces, and now listen, inflation, deflation are manipulated right now, but the market will win out. If there are that many pieces of currency out there, we will eventually have hyperinflation. Now, when and how, I don't know. But I will mention this much, is that there is no way that any government has survived the collapse of its currency. When the Federal Reserve note goes down, how do you run a government? Now, people who have skills and abilities and what have you will be able to survive. But well, I don't think we have too much need for all these regulators, as you say, to regulate the width of the toilet paper rolls.
I agree. But here's another question for you. You know, one of the things that happened when we shipped jobs over to China and third world countries over the course of the last 15 years or so, 20 years, how did we compensate where it didn't show up with high unemployment rates here in this country? And the compensation was they were hired by government agencies.
Exactly.
We had a big jump in the number of government employees, particularly at the state level. All right? So if we're going to, okay, let's get rid of government. Now we're going to reallocate those government workers to where? I mean, we got a problem here.
The private sector can absorb it if the private sector is allowed to breathe. But here's the situation. This is how bad the deceit goes. Classical economics refers to the gross national product of the outputs of goods and services out of the private sector. And government doesn't produce goods or services necessarily that people want to buy, but for whatever reasons. Then they switch it to GDP, gross domestic product. Now, if you increase government spending, that actually is at the expense of the private economy, always is, because where else do you get monies from those who are the producers in the society? So, yeah, we've been told, oh, the economy's better. Oh, look at the GDP. Oh, we had that much growth. No, we had that much growth in government. But the simple truth of the matter is we're running out of resources. If you give people enough land and enough resources, they will find a way of making a living. Now, classically, going back at least 2,000-plus years, government would start out small after revolution. But because men sin in the streets and in their homes, the government would tend to grow until it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and it was overthrown. The protectors became predators, and there are parasites, and they would shift more and more people from private sector, whether it's agriculture, trade, or whatever, into the public sector, working for the government, usually military, police, that sort of a thing, going all the way back in Western civilization to ancient Greece. But rather than sitting there and going, okay, we ought to transfer some of these people in government back into the private sector. They've never done that.
Yeah, I understand that.
Now, what we have right now is we have a bunch of banksters who are controlling almost all the governments of the world. They are a cancer.
Jim, you got 30 seconds.
They are a cancer, and they want to destroy us. I'll let it go at that. Thank you again.
No, I understand. It's the government.
Don't forget to call me, Jim.
It's one of the things that you can see in the Constitution. It was that the Constitution was designed to protect us from the government. They understood government is the principal enemy of the people. That's true in every country in the world. They tried to protect us. We've ignored the Constitution, and now we are going to pay big time. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners, $650 for our special today. It's the same one. We're going to continue throughout the week. You can buy one or 100 of them, and that is the 90% silver, $20 face value, 1/4 ounce gold eagle. It's a great little package for any type of bartering that you might come in, future usage and so forth. It's a great investment. And this includes your shipping costs, and it also includes the book, All the President's Bankers. And so give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com.
You know, when we were talking to Jim from West Virginia here in the previous segment, we're talking about the private sector, if it's free to do its what it can do, it can take care of the problem. And that has been a premise that this country's operated on for, I don't know, perhaps a couple of centuries. It is a presumption, an assumption. It's a premise, blah, blah, blah. It's a cliche that we talk about. And it's true, provided you have high tariffs to restrict the influx of cheap foreign labor. And when I say high tariffs to restrict the influx of cheap foreign labor, I don't mean them coming over here on a boat, all right? Although maybe that's part of it, but that's not my concern. My concern is cheap foreign labor is here insofar as they manufacture products in China for a fraction of what they can manufacture them here in the United States, and as a result, jobs are in China that we don't have here. Now, Jim and I were talking about, you know, how do we reallocate? We reallocate workers in this country, okay. All right? And we've, okay, they close down the coal mines, we'll get them jobs in the iron mines, all right? Or whatever, or the trimming trees or something, we'll find something more. That will work unless we have no tariffs to protect us from all the cheap labor in foreign countries. You know, it's one of the things I've been arguing for some time. What we need to do is go back. We need to make our own TVs. We need to make our own computers, our own flat-screen TVs.
Yeah, but the problem, Al, is those tariffs, when they came off, at that point in time, you didn't have all the manufacturing already outsourced. Now you have all these manufacturing
plants
everywhere.
That's why. It's because
I know, but it's kind of a little too late. Because what? Okay, we do tariffs and so forth. They're still going to manufacture. They're still going to manufacture things overseas.
I understand that. But people are going to have to pay higher prices, which allow people in the manufacturer within the United States to charge higher prices. Put the tariffs up, it costs you more to buy. Walmart can't just get things dirt cheap from China and sell them at dirt cheap prices. We have to pay more. We would have to go in and say, oh, gee, I'm going to get a new Sawzall. I could get it at Walmart back in the day when we were getting things from China. I could get it for $30. Now that it's manufactured in the United States, it's going to cost me $100. And we can say, oh, that's a bad situation, but somebody's getting paid, right? And that money is all staying within the United States. It stimulates the economy. It avoids I don't mean that this is a perfect solution or anything else. I'm just saying that as long as we have to compete with cheap Chinese labor or cheap labor from Vietnam or from wherever, as long as they can trade here on a level playing field and they can just bring their products in here, American labor rates have to fall. Unemployment has to rise. And if you don't want the wages to fall and you don't want unemployment to rise, you've got to restore tariffs and restrict the import of foreign products. And even though it winds up making higher products, we make higher profits, we have standards of living, higher standards of living. And whatever efficiencies we can generate, we can now sell our products to foreign countries if we work on our efficiency. And we could do that, I think. But we can't just assume that the private sector can absorb and reallocate workers when the entire workforce is not just the people within the United States, but in fact it's the people within China and, you know, Vietnam and wherever. I don't know that there is a good solution to these problems. And I don't offer, you know, my suggestions aren't based on the idea, oh, this will definitely solve the problem. We've got problems I'm not absolutely convinced can be solved, but to my mind, you know, one, you've got to restrict that foreign labor from its impact in this country. And they say, oh, no, we need global free trade. Well, that's great for China. China has increased 7, 8%, 9% a year. Supposedly. Why? Because we knocked down our tariff barriers and let China sell into our markets. But at the same time, we've gone down while they've gone up. Our government has sacrificed the American dream. It's sacrificed the American people. Says, we need to support China. I don't have anything against China, but I don't have anything for it either. China is not my problem. I don't regard it as my problem. I'm not here to make sure that China lives happily ever after, assuming that's even possible. Our government has been saying, oh, no, we'll sacrifice the American people, we'll dump the American dream, and we'll take care of China.
But it's true. I mean, I agree. We do have to have tariffs and so forth. I get that. But, I mean, higher prices, people, they can't even absorb higher prices.
They
so
can if they
have
higher wages.
Okay.
The whole idea is they can have higher wages. They're not going to be able to absorb any prices. Right now you've got 23%, if John Williams is right, you've got 23% unemployed.
Come
back to work.
I'm not arguing with you. I agree with you. I think that is part of the solution. But I think there's a lot that has to be done before we even get there. I mean, the house has to be cleaned. And when you talk about, I told you I had something, Google, their lobbying, their spending reached a new high in early 2015. $5.5 million Google spent in the first 3 months of 2015. It's the most since the company began lobbying in 2007. And this is according to the government database. Its ranking for this quarter's spending could not be immediately determined. So yeah, that could even be higher than that. But okay,
I'm surprised that's all it is.
Well, this is just the first quarter. A push to allow skilled immigrants to more easily stay in the United States. Net neutrality, tax reform, and broadband deployment. This is what they want. This is what they're spending in order to get this. This is what's going, and this is the biggest. In 2014, they spent $16.8 million, and that was behind the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They spent $124 million. The National Association of Realtors, they spent $55
million. And what did Wall Street spend?
Oh, they're not going to list
probably
that.
Probably about $3 trillion, which is what probably. They came from in the first place.
Well, they don't consider Wall Street lobbying, you know.
Uh-huh.
they're bed partners. So, mm-hmm. So I mean, when you have this going on, and, you know, Google's their big spending in Washington, you know, they want Washington, they want Congress to help them defend their antitrust case that the European Union is bringing against them. So they're paying Washington all this money. Hey, can you help me with my legal defense? It's just so, you know, this is how we need to clean house. Everything else is just.
We need to clean our own minds. We need to get up to speed on this stuff. We need to learn. We need to study.
Unfortunately, so
far behind the curve right now in so many different regards that it's going to take something like, I mean, it really will take something like a miracle. And maybe it will take a miracle to save us from our current circumstances. This is not, there's no easy solution in sight. But we got into this trouble, took us 20 years or more to get into it. It's going to take years to get out also, but just because it takes years doesn't mean we can't start working now. Part of the deal is we've got to have a system of values that we all agree on. We said, okay, what are we here for? Are we here to save the world? I am not. That's not my job. Right? I'm not here to save the world. Are we here to save the country? I'd say, yeah. I'd go along with that. We have people in positions of power that say, no, we've got to save the world. We've got to create a new world order. We've got to have global free trade. What's that got to do with the people of the United States of America? How do we benefit from that? I don't think we do. I think we pay a terrible price. We lose everything we ever worked for in this country while we are trying to establish some sort of kumbaya global whatever, democracy, new world order, whatever you want to call it, fascist system, I don't care. But somewhere along the way, we have to agree. What are we going to do? Let's take care of this country. Let's not worry about whether or not people are employed or they're not employed in Mexico. And let's not worry about Canada and England and Israel and the rest of these places. Let's sit back and take care of this country first and foremost. And if push comes to shove, take care of America. And anyone who gets in the way of that, trials for treason. Don't want to take care of this country? Want to sacrifice this country? They, you know, we have people in government working for the New World Order. There is no proviso in our Constitution for these people to betray the trust of this nation in order to create a North American Union that includes Canada and Mexico. What they're doing is unconstitutional. It is treasonous, and it's been done. George W. Bush was into it up to his ears. He was encouraging Mexicans, openly encouraging Mexicans to invade, come into this country as illegal aliens. Barack Obama's been doing the same thing. Clinton, I don't know how deep he was in it. It wasn't quite as obvious, but that was earlier.
No, he just sold things to the Chinese.
Yeah, I know. I know.
This is how the Chinese... you know, are where they are today.
And the government,
The
government will come down and tell us, we need to get behind and back the government and back all this stuff. They'll play on your patriotism anytime they're talking. They'll say, you need to support this because it's a patriotic thing to do. But at the same time, the government has no loyalty to the American people. They want your loyalty. They don't intend to return any. Something's got to be done to change that. One of the things is we're going to have to start electing politicians based on something other than their smile. We're going to have to stop electing politicians because they appear to have been sent here from central casting. We're going to have to start actually electing politicians and who are telling us the truth, telling us what they're going to do, and then hold them to those campaign promises. I think a politician who lies to you during a political campaign, we're going to do this, that, or the other. I don't care if he's a Democrat or Republican. He gets into office and he betrays what he promised. You ought to be able to sue that guy.
You know what?
Drive him out of office. If you're not going to do what you promised to do when we voted for you, get out.
Yeah, but the problem is, Al, it's the people. I mean, here, look at Hillary. My gosh, she's having emails. She deletes emails. They have their own private server. There's a book that was released showing that the Clintons Foundation was getting all this money while she was out there going around traveling in the world when she was working in her office. Only 15% of the money of the donation going into the Clinton Foundation supposedly was spent on charity. And it's like, oh, I'm voting for Hillary because she's going to be the first president of the United States. I mean,
she's
really?
Just as big a crook as any of the rest of you.
That's my point.
And maybe more than most.
The people have to change.
I understand that. But you know,
they have to change before we can change anything in Washington.
That's probably true. That's undoubtedly true. And the change that needs to be made is the people need to become moral. It may be that we were once a moral people. We are not now.
So until there's something that makes the people change,
yep,
we have this. People need to be prepared. And that's what this is all about.
I agree. You need to
protect yourself
as best
you can. To bring in this information so they can.
Better times.
I mean, I hate to say it. I would love to be able to, you know, vote somebody in and let them be up there and say, hey, I'm going to be a responsible politician and I'm going to do this. Well, we know that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I know.
So until there's people out there that change that says, enough's enough, you know, let's hold them accountable when we elect them.
Well, there must be a way of holding these people accountable. And, you know, I talk about it every so often. What's the fundamental problem that allows the distribution of wealth to favor the elite to such an extraordinary degree in its political campaign contribution laws? We have passed laws that allow the rich to bribe the Congress, and we call it political campaign contribution.
We call it lobbying.
We call it lobbying, and what it is bribing. That's what it is. And they can dance around and say, oh, no, we're honorable men. And they do. Some of them say, oh, it doesn't matter. They give us money just for good government. They don't give us money because they expect anything from us. What a bunch of crap. There's not a corporation in the world that hands out money to any significant degree just because it's a nice thing to do. They expect a return on investment, even if it's only increased popularity among the public. They might not get the cash in hand to give you $500,000. You see that I get $1 million worth of business out of the government. I'm not talking about that necessarily, but they don't do it. Just corporations don't hand out money just to be nice. They hand out money because they expect some sort of a return on investment that will enhance that corporation. And maybe that return is in, you know, public perception that the government's pretty nice or that the corporation is good people or whatever. You know, public relations, maybe that's it. But it's just insane. They say, oh, my gosh, we're not trying to bribe these people. Oh, bunk. Our congressmen and senators are for sale to the highest bidder. They are a bunch of treasonous whores. They are for sale to the highest bidder. That's why I call them treasonous whores, and we're going to have to let it go at that because we're out of time. I want to thank all you folks for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
But still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.